May it please the court, counsel. There are two issues that I'd like to address this morning. I would take a few minutes with the court's indulgence to discuss the cross-reference that the district court used in fashioning its impression of the guideline sentence, but I'd like to take most of my time to discuss the reasonableness of the sentence. In determining the guideline range of 6 to 12 months, the district court used a cross-reference to Section 2H1.1 of the sentencing guidelines based upon its finding that my client had violated 18 U.S.C. Section 242 in violating the civil rights of the alleged victim here, Ms. Coleman, and depriving her of her civil rights. That was based upon the court's finding that my client had essentially coerced Ms. Coleman into a sex act following her arrest. Although Ms. Coleman testified that she, in fact, felt intimidated, that, I would suggest to the court, was a subjective determination on her part. She testified on cross-examination that she thought she would go to jail because she was driving without a license. No one had to tell her that, and in fact, my client never did tell her that. She testified that she knew that driving without insurance might cause her to be arrested and to go to jail without being told that by my client. And in fact, my client never told her that. There was simply no evidence that my client threatened her in any way, shape, or form with either arrest or prosecution.
What did he plead guilty to?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
What did he plead guilty to?
He pled guilty to a violation of 18 U.S.C. Section 1001 in that during the course of the investigation of Ms. Coleman's complaint, he did, in fact, lie to the federal agents about both being in Jones Park at the time and of having or being involved in the commission of a sex act. That is what he pled guilty to. That is what he was found guilty of. Our contention is that the appropriate guideline range for violation of that that act was 0 to 6 months. And, of course, the court sentenced my client to 30 months. I would also point out that during the course of the hearing, it was pointed out that Ms. Coleman, although denying under oath at the sentencing hearing that she asked my client for money, following the act, actually, in fact, told the agents that she did ask for money and that my client did not pay her. In short, we suggest that finding that my client coerced Ms. Coleman into the sex act was against the manifest weight of the evidence, and the finding that the cross-reference to Section 2H1.1 applied was clearly erroneous. We also contend that in sentencing my client to 30 months, as opposed to the 0 to 6 months called for under our interpretation of the guidelines, or the 6 to 12 months that the court found, is not in compliance with 18 U.S.C. Section 3553. Section 3553 requires the court to impose a sentence that is sufficient but not greater than necessary to comply with the purposes set forth in subparagraph 2.
That's a relatively subjective error.
I agree with that, Your Honor. I would not suggest otherwise. However, the court's discretion is not
unfettered.
Unlimited.
Unfettered.
But I was going to use unfettered, but...
Go ahead. It's
okay.
A good word.
It's not unfettered.
But, Mr. Steele, you know, it is a tragic case. I really... But, you know, there are a whole host of dangers.
I have to apologize. I can't hear you.
Because I can't get the words out. It's not you. It's me. There were a whole host of dangers that were caused by Officer Carpenter's behavior. You know, this dangerously drunk woman is permitted to drive herself home, you know, causing great risk to other drivers. Four young children are left home without any adult supervision. Wouldn't a judge be entitled to increase the sentence under 3553 for those reasons alone?
And, Your Honor, had the court decided to increase the guideline sentence or to go above the guideline sentence to something, in our view, more reasonable, say 18 months, we perhaps would not even be making this argument. But the court imposed a sentence which, under our view, is five times higher than the high end of the guideline range, even under the government's interpretation and the court's finding, 2.5 times the high end of the guideline range. It is simply, in our view, an unreasonable sentence. The court stressed a couple of factors, the need to reflect the seriousness of the offense and to afford adequate deterrence and to protect the public from the crimes of others. But it appears from the record that the court, although it did refer to my client's the characteristics of my client and his history, it seems that the court essentially focused on the other two factors and essentially the remaining factors under Section 3553 were applied very little at all. The court, in arriving at its sentence, listed 38 separate cases in the Southern District of Illinois, cases involving public corruption, cases involving fraud, election fraud, extortion, defrauding HUD, witness tampering, theft, the smuggling of contraband into a jail, tax evasion, intimidation of witnesses, embezzlement, offenses with which my client had nothing to do. We would suggest that because of the wide disparity between the guideline range and the sentence, that in fact my client, despite what the court said, was in fact being sentenced in part due to the sins of others, and we would suggest that the sentence is unreasonable.
So they stopped this woman. She, at the time they stopped her, she wasn't committing any moving violations. Is that right?
Well, Officer Carpenter's partner said that he heard a call that there was an erratic driver in that area.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's correct. I don't. There's nothing in the record indicating that.
And your defendant knew this woman, didn't he?
Yes, sir.
So you don't think the judge might have thought that he just thought he could pull this woman over because he knew her and perhaps made an assessment of who she was?
Your Honor, I think based on the evidence, an equally viable or perhaps more viable conclusion might be that she knew him and found a way to get out of it.
Well, I mean, I don't think that's what the judge concluded in this case. And I think that factored in perhaps to the judge's assessment of how a law enforcement officer in this power relationship chose to conduct himself. So I think that perhaps would be a fair reading of where the judge, Judge Reagan, may have been coming from. But.
Well, and I would not argue with the court's interpretation of what the district court did. Our position is that the final determination was unreasonable.
Well, thank you, Mr. Steele. Mr. Weinhoff?
Thank you. Good morning. May it please the Court, Counsel. The District Court's findings of facts were not clearly erroneous, and the District Court did not abuse its discretion in sentencing the defendant for 30 months for egregious police misconduct. This case did not involve, it was not a love story involving a romantic encounter in Jones Park.
Hardly seems so.
This is a sad story of a woman who was exploited and who was violated in a very personal way by this defendant. And that determination of whether or not this was consent or whether or not that this was coercion is what drives the determination of whether or not the cross-reference to the civil rights guideline provision should apply. The District Court found, as a matter of fact, that this woman was coerced, that she did not voluntarily consent, and that she was obviously under fear, and the implicit threat of arrest was present during this entire ordeal from the time these police officers stopped her until after the sex act occurred. Those findings of facts are not clearly erroneous, and when the District Court chooses between two permissible inferences from the evidence, those findings of facts cannot be clearly erroneous.
Is his partner still on the force?
He was fired, actually. He was not prosecuted, but he was fired.
Anybody left there in the police department?
There are many police officers who are still there, but as you can see from the attachments from one of the government exhibits of just how dramatically understaffed that police department is, I know I've certainly prosecuted a number of those police officers, including their chief of police, and many others in our office have prosecuted some of those police officers. We're quite literally fighting an uphill battle against a desperate violent crime situation and a desperate corruption situation in the Metro East area. The findings of facts as it relates to coercion, I think, are very clear. And this court's job on review is not to search the record for any facts which may tend to support the officer's explanation for what happened, but rather it's whether or not there's any evidentiary support that would tend to support the District Court's conclusion of coercion. Certainly the record is replete with evidence. She actually testified in person, subject to cross-examination, and even stood up physically on the witness stand and physically demonstrated the manner in which she was groped and fondled and essentially molested during what purported to be a frisk and a pat-down from the very beginning of this. So in my view, the evidence of coercion is overwhelming, certainly well-supported in the record, obviously not clearly erroneous. And so the first issue of whether or not the cross-reference to the civil rights violation should apply, the record is ample, and the court should be affirmed on that point. But as to the substantive reasonableness argument advanced by the court, this is an extremely deferential standard of review, and there's no presumption that an above-guideline sentence is unreasonable. The test and the question is whether or not the court gave adequate explanation and adequate reasons at sentencing consistent with 3553A to promote the perception of a fair sentencing hearing. And that is exactly what Judge Reagan did in this case. His explanation of the 3553A factors was 11 pages. It was detailed, it was objective, and it was fair. He looked at factors particularized to this defendant. He identified areas where there was mitigating evidence. He identified areas where there was aggravating evidence, and he imposed a sentence, though higher than the guidelines, that was below the sentence requested by the government in this case. And he also imposed a sentence that was consistent with other guidelines that we asked the court to consider by analogy under 3553A. And the defendant takes issue with the fact that the court's research identified 38 different cases involving police and public official misconduct, but that's exactly what the court should do. The Hill case, United States versus Hill, involved the deputy liquor commissioner from the city of East St. Louis, who himself, in addition to extorting a liquor licensee, attempted to coerce a female liquor licensee into providing oral sex to him. And in that case, the district court also considered the demographics and the widespread history and culture of public corruption, and said that it was appropriate for the court to consider those factors in determining whether there was a need to deter others. And that's exactly the context in which the government argued these other cases, and it's exactly the context in which Judge Reagan relied when he imposed sentence. He looked at the widespread history of public corruption, and he said that prior sentences have been inadequate and that a significant sentence was required in order to send that message of deterrence to others as an issue of general deterrence. Quite frankly, he would have committed error if he had not considered that argument, because deterrence is a specific factor.
Well, he wouldn't have committed reversible error.
That's a fact. That is true. But he was required to consider deterrence because it's a specifically enumerated factor under 3553A. And when you look at the types of crimes that have been committed by police and public officials in East St. Louis, bribery, theft, kickbacks, obstruction of justice, racketeering, extortion, and even solicitation of murder, that's a collection of convictions that you might expect to hear from those associated with organized crime or the mafia. But these are cases involving public officials and police officials in the Metro East area.
Well, maybe they're organized too, but go ahead.
It is a terrific problem that we're combating in the Southern District of Illinois. This crime did not occur in a vacuum. The defendant was not just wantonly had his sentence increased out of some unthoughtful, generalized wish to punish an officer from the Metro East more harshly than from another area. That's not what happened at all. The court, in a very carefully reasoned, methodical way, went through and individually tailored this sentence to the facts of what the defendant did and also the needs of the community. Is entirely appropriate. There's no error there, and it's certainly not an abuse of discretion. The government asks the court to affirm the sentence on all grounds.
Thank you, Mr. Weinhoff. Mr. Steele?
I believe my time's up.
Do you have any rebuttal time left? You have a minute.
1 minute.
Before you take your minute, hold off. You'll still have the minute. This guy was very well represented, both in your brief and your argument. They're two of the best I've heard on a subject that I thought was a little difficult to skate through. I congratulate you.
Thank you very much, Your Honor. That means a lot to me.
Ditto.
I'm sorry?
Ditto.
In listening to the government's argument and in preparing for this argument this morning, it occurred to me that crime does not occur in a vacuum, and East St. Louis, Venice, Washington Park, all of these areas have problems not only with public corruption but with a lot of things. Drug use and drug sales are rampant in those areas, and yet we very seldom see a sentence imposed that is 2.5 times the high end of the guideline range in a drug case. Same issues apply, same need for deterrence apply. I don't think that the need for deterrence in this case is greater than in those cases. And again, we would ask the court to reverse the decision of the trial court and remand for resentencing.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Steele, and thank you, Mr. Steele, for accepting this assignment and ably representing the defendant.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.